How do we find joy in our struggles? How can we move forward through trauma and grief? How often do we look around us and notice that everyone else is struggling just as much as we are, just in different ways? How can we overcome our reactive minds when we're triggered and be better than before? These are a few of the questions that we answer in this podcast with our special guest, Michelle Scharf. Michelle has been a massage therapist, a doula, a midwife, a lobbyist, and ran several campaigns. She is currently now a life coach and runs her own podcast, Relentlessly Resilient. Join us on this journey of learning how to overcome our trauma and our grief and recognize that we're all trying to do the same thing, and that is to find joy. If you are ready to go, welcome to You Already Are. Welcome to You Already Are. I'm your host, Alyssa Carlson. This is my co-host,
Michael Gardner.
And we're excited to be here. We've got a special guest. Michael, why don't you go ahead and introduce our special guest today?
Okay, this is Michelle Scharf. Michelle and I have known each other since 1996. That's when we met, right? When you and John went through a training in Sacramento, correct?
Yep.
So you lived in the Salt Lake City area.
Yeah, John had actually taken Quest in Salt Lake. And I decided to hop on to Quest in Sacramento and join up for Summit in Salt Lake with him.
Oh, okay. I knew somewhere, but you staffed with me, and then we connected on some other projects and did a lot of things together. But you have been a doula, correct? A massage therapist. You're now a certified life coach. Among other things, you worked on a political campaign and were key in that, and I got involved with you. So we've done a lot together. To not go into Michelle's story too much, she faced a lot of adversity, and she still comes out of it shining and moving forward. So basically, you're here to just, the purpose of this whole thing, Alyssa is on a mission to support women in the journey to inner peace. You know, I'm here because these principles are universal, but I want to support her in that. So you're somebody who some people could say you could have given up, and people would say, I don't blame you. But you didn't give up. You didn't fold. Well, after one of the first instances, then you had another. And then recently you're going through something else.
Much like life for all of us. You know, some of us don't get so many things to handle and have to deal with, but some of us get repeated ones.
Yep. And you have actually started your own podcast that's been around for a while, and it's called Relentlessly Resilient.
Yep.
What's that about?
Well, you mentioned that I was involved in campaigns. And while I was on campaigns, traveled the entire state of Utah. And while I was meeting people, I tend to connect with people, and people tend to tell me really their worst stories, the things that are hardest for them. You know, I carry these stories in my heart. They really meant something to me. And then my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And those stories were oftentimes, I thought about the faces of the people, the stories that they'd shared with me, and how they were still moving forward in life, that they were still able to find joy and find happiness. And I clung to those stories. And also those people had become friends with me on Facebook. And I started sharing very vulnerable parts. I shut my public page down, but I was sharing with these people that I'd met across the state my story and what I was now going through. And after a year had passed, I ran into somebody, and he was involved in politics and was working for Senator Lee at the time, but had worked for KSL, our largest broadcast house out here. And he said, hey, what are you doing now? And I said, you know, I don't know what I want to do. I was working temporarily on a governor's race at the time. And I said, I had an idea for a podcast. And I told him about it. And he said, I think you should talk to Cheryl Worsley, our executive director of our podcast. And I said, okay. He set up the meeting. I went and pitched my idea. I asked somebody to be a co-host with me, and she also had a story, and our lives had kind of intersected. She was also a widow, And they said yes, and we started. We've been up now 3 years. We finally have our first official sponsor, Miki Couture. Blankets are now sponsoring our podcast. And so it's growing. We have over 70,000 subscribers, lots of downloads, and it's just a small little podcast that started from my journey in grief, actually. It was not only the stories that I had carried with me, but what had happened, there were some pivotal moments in my grief journey that awakened my awareness to really the world around me and to others suffering and grief and pain. And I remember one day I was ugly crying in my car. I mean, I had no tissue. I had tears coming down my face, snot running down out of my nose. It was not attractive. And I was thinking, who's looking at me? I'm so embarrassed. And I'm looking and I start looking in all of the windows around me. And I started noticing people lost in their own world and people, you know, one person looked really angry and intense and maybe in a hurry to get somewhere. And somebody else looked like they were really bored and kind of daydreaming. And I realized we're all just doing our lives pretty much like driving down the street in a car. Our lives are all happening here in our heads and our hearts, but we're not really paying attention really to what's going on around us. And I thought, maybe if we were willing to have these vulnerable conversations about the hard parts of life, that maybe we could realize we're all doing really hard things. And maybe we could just give a little bit more grace to somebody else when they cut us off on the road or when something happens at the grocery line, someone's being rude or whatever. Maybe we could just maybe give a little grace that we don't know what's going on in their lives and to just be a little kinder. And so that was my intention with the podcast.
That's amazing, Michelle. There's a concept that I feel like my personal life coach has tried to really drill into my head of just like going to the outside and seeing, trying to connect with other people and trying to be present and trying to see the needs of other people. And I feel like that was like that moment for you of just recognizing like, wow, I'm suffering, but like, look at all these other people who are with me in this. But we don't, I feel like as humans, we've kind of stopped that connection. We've cut it off and we've become in our phones and in our heads and in our computers and all that stuff. But you saw it and you started connecting to those other people and you reached out through this podcast as a service to them to say, hey, we're in this together. Let's do this together, right? And you were able to do that outward connection. And I feel like this world needs so much more of that. So thank you.
I do too. And you know, the great thing about my podcast is while we're growing and people are listening, it's really such a beautiful service for the people that come on. I often get these people will stay in contact with me and they'll say, oh my gosh, it was so healing. I didn't know I needed to share this publicly in a way. It's like being seen and really being heard. And I think that we're missing that. We think that there's connection when we get on TikTok or we get on Instagram and we're watching vacation pictures and we're jealous and we're envious of all of the money that's out there or all of the things these people are doing and maybe I can't do. And it's actually creating disconnection and it's also creating a suspended reality, really. It's not real, right? And so my show is opposite of that. It's all about getting to the heart of the matter, talking the truth about trauma that we're all going through. And there's different levels of that. And, you know, we've had people come on that lost a leg and they're like, well, I didn't lose somebody in my life that was close to me, but, you know, I lost my leg. It's like, oh, no. We don't get to compare grief. Your loss is your loss and it's huge and it's big and it's your mountain to climb. When you're in it, that's where you're at. And you don't need to like, well, mine isn't as big of a loss or mine isn't as difficult as that. No, it's just what you're going through. It's not less than or more than. It's where you're at. And it can be a lot, regardless of what that thing is. People going through divorce, that I have found since becoming a widow and being in the singles world, I have met people that divorce, I would say has probably been more challenging and on some ways much more difficult or or hard for them than my loss of losing my husband. Not that I want to really compare that either, because my loss is huge. What I'm saying is that we can't really compare it because we don't really have all of the perspective of where that person came from in the first place, what brought them to this point, and how they're managing through it.
So when we compare, we judge it. Yours is worse than mine, or mine is worse than yours. You don't know how I feel. And that's true. I don't know how you felt losing John. I know how I felt when he died.
Right.
But I can't know how you felt because I'm not you. And so when we compare our experiences and judge them as less or more, we tend to discount one or the other. And actually, that's part of the disconnect. I can't relate to you, or you know, yours is different than mine and stuff like that. I would like to ask you, tell a little bit about you and John, your journey. I mean, I know what I know, but, you know, it's your journey. So if you wouldn't mind just sharing about your relationship with John a little bit.
Well, I like to say that, and I'm writing a book right now, actually, about it, and it morphs a lot. But I will say, John and I met, I was 17, he was 22. So by California standards, that would have been statutory rape. We met very young. I snuck around to see him. And I like to say that we raised each other. And Michael got to be a part of John and I raising each other. And he got to see a lot of that process. So we raised each other. And there was a lot of codependency in our relationship in those early years. But as we matured and as we grew confident in ourselves and in our own space and our own worth and our own rewards of success at work or whatever, we started to figure out how to pull apart that codependency and be more interdependent. Unfortunately, it didn't really happen until towards the very end of our relationship. And it happened maybe, I would say, 8 months to a year before he was diagnosed. And then cancer made that break really happen. Cancer provided some really beautiful gifts and so many lessons of growth. It's hard for me to say that I'm fortunate for it, but I actually am. I do miss my husband and I love him, and we were good for each other. But it wasn't always easy. And there was a lot in that 32 years of marriage that we had. And some of it I didn't realize until I started dating other people and started healing myself in other ways through those relationships, of just how I couldn't be healed in that relationship with John. Because some of the things that happened, some of the trust that was broke down, couldn't ever fully be rebuilt. Because you can't take things completely back. And there's no way to fully rebuild broken trust. And so I'm learning those things now, and they're beautiful as well. I do miss John and I love him. And I'm really also really grateful for the growth that I've been able to have because of the situation that unfolded in our lives.
So I was just speaking with my sister about the losses that happen in this world and how there are just so many people who are losing family members, close friends, children. Like they're losing people from this world. And my perspective on it is a transition from this world to the next. And I fully believe that I will see them again. But I have not lost someone who is close to me. I haven't experienced deep loss like that. And I wanted to get your perspective on how, when you're in the thick of it, how do you find that peace and that joy? And is there an option for that when you're in the thick of it, when you're in your grieving? And I think there's a difference between, and this is somebody who has not experienced loss like this before, but there's a difference between having that grief and going through it and accepting that grief and finding peace in that grief, and the difference between grieving and going through depression and not accepting what's happened. Is that making sense?
Yeah, I would say depression is part of grief, and it's okay. And it sometimes comes for a time, and sometimes it needs to be managed with medication or other things. But your question on
when you're in the thick of it, how do you get through it? How do you accept what's happening and find peace or joy with what's happening?
There's no quick blanket answer here because, again, we all have such a wide perspective of religious beliefs that will feed into that grief process. And so it really depends on the person. So as a life coach working with women who are dealing with grief, I really have to be present with where they're at in their belief system. I will tell you that I was raised in Missionary Baptist. My family is still very religious. I left that church and became LDS, a Latter-day Saint, and was very active for 25 years and was in a faith crisis during the process of losing my husband. Terrible timing. And it's been an incredible journey for me of faith. I remember my dad said to me, and to have perspective, that my dad doesn't believe that Mormons believe in God, nor are they Christian. So that's his perspective. And he doesn't really know where I sit religiously because we don't talk about those things. But what he did say to me was, I don't know how you're going to get through this without Jesus Christ. And so I thought that that was a really interesting thing for my father to say to me in the process of my grief. I actually have gotten through this. I'm not going to say it's not without Christ, but I'm not going to say that it is also because of Christ. Neither of those things would be true statements. I will tell you that what I've discovered is John actually is still here. He's actually still with me. I've continued a relationship with my husband. It's a very different relationship. I have had him come to me and answer questions in very strange and mysterious ways. For instance, I had a sister-in-law who went to psychic in California, and she went for a completely different reason. 4 months earlier, I had just moved into my new home, and I was talking to my husband in my closet, and I was saying, you know, I think you'd be so proud. I think that this is the things that you would hate that I did with the house. These are the things I love that I did with the house that I know that I would have had to fight you on. And also, I'm really concerned about our family and these things. And there were four key things. And I was speaking out loud. And then I just kind of fell to my knees and cried and had a moment where I was grieving not having him and struggling with the questions that I was struggling with for my family. And I was in prayer about them. And I left the closet and I didn't really give it much thought. But 4 months later, when my sister-in-law had gone to the psychic, she called me up and she said, Michelle, I need you to sit down. I went to a psychic today and John came and he has some information for you. And it was answering of those questions in the order that I asked them. I had spoken of this to nobody. Nobody was in my home. I wasn't a big believer in really that kind of psychic medium stuff. I mean, I have had my own experiences working with people and having some kind of medium experiences, but this was a whole different level. And I realized in that moment, he's here. And I realized how we feel so our physical world is the only thing that exists, but that's not true. Later on in my grief process, I was screaming at God and was really angry, and I was letting God have it. And I had a moment with God, and I felt embraced by him. And I realized that we are all connected, and my religious upbringing wasn't exactly the true nature of God. And what I experienced kind of freed my soul from feeling the need for religion. And now I commune with God, and I commune with my dead family members, and I ask for their assistance and help, and I do feel it. I had a situation where my husband, I was dating a man, and he came to me and woke me up in the middle of the night. I felt his hand on my back. I woke up as if to tell him goodbye for work, like I'd done for 32 years, and I realized, oh, that's weird. John's dead. And I heard a voice come over me and said, it's time to let this man go. And I thought, well, why? There is absolutely no reason. The night before, we were talking about him moving into my home. And then I was covered in peace and I fell asleep. It was such a profound experience. When I woke up, the first call I made was to that man. And I said, I need to ask you one question. And I just need your first response. And he said, okay. And I said, I need to know if I need to let you go. And he didn't immediately say, no, of course not. He was like, And he stumbled around, and then he broke up with me 4 hours later. And it ended up being kind of a nightmare situation. I've ended up having to get a stalking injunction against that man. But I'm like, wow, look at what I was saved from. He's still watching out for me. He's still providing for me. He still loves me and he still cares for me. And he's still hoping that I can figure this out and live my best life.
Well, that was John. He was always about providing. I remember when I was invited to coach him, because he wasn't providing, and boy, he felt probably 6 inches tall overall. That was a great journey, very fulfilling as he came out of that. And then for the rest of his life, even with the cancer and the pain and all of that going on, he was always about providing for you. He would work his tail off through the pain. And that's a great lesson, because you're going through the pain. And it wasn't over after John.
No.
You had more piled on.
Yeah. And you know, these things don't happen in silos or in a bubble, right?
Right.
So what I don't typically talk about is I had two younger kids in their teen years at the time, both having their own struggles, both causing some tension between John and I during the time of his transition. And that was really hard. It's still really painful that I feel at times that I got a little bit robbed of valuable time that I could have had. And instead we were stressing and trying to figure out how to manage the situation. So it didn't happen in a silo, his loss itself. And no, since John's passing, there's been times where, you know, I had a child who decided she didn't want to be in contact with me for a time. And that was absolutely devastating. I had to release not only my identity as being John's wife, but now I had to release my identity of what it meant to be a mother, because I had a child that was no longer wanting me to be in their life. And everything that I had built this family for us to be there for one another. And now we were falling apart. And so I had to let go of all my perception of what it meant to be a mom or what it meant to be valuable or all of those things. It was a really hard, dark road. That road was harder for me to get through than the loss of John.
But also with Joshua, he got a motorcycle wreck.
That was my youngest, yes. That was his third wreck. Both of the other wrecks could have been really bad. He walked away with no injuries, but then he got in a motorcycle accident and he just now moved out of my house this month, but he was here for 2 years where I was providing for him and taking care of his needs. And that's been a long journey. He had 5 surgeries during that time. And then just this December, my grandson had what's called an AVM. So basically he had a rupture. He had a tangled mess of arteries and veins in his brain and it ruptured. So he's basically recovering from a stroke. It'll take him more than a year to even get back to where he was. And we don't know if he'll regain everything entirely, but he's, you know, at first he was paralyzed on the right side of his body. He's got more strength on that side, but it's not back to where he needs to be. He's progressing, but he doesn't have the ability. Like he could see a fork on the table and a written thing that says fork, and he'd be like, that's a fork. But if you say, can you get me a fork? He'd be like, I don't know what a fork is. I don't know what that word is. So it's really interesting how our brains work. And that was tragic. That was also a really hard thing. It was interesting because right when John was dying, I don't know if you remember, Michael, he had a near-death experience like 12 years earlier.
Yeah.
And he had so much peace about death. He never feared it after that point. But when he was in the dying stages, he said to me, I wish I could remember what it felt like to, you know, feel that peace that I felt when I had that near-death experience. And I don't have that. And I don't feel the peace that I used to feel. And he said, he was kind of in this in and out stage before he went completely under and he was sleeping a lot. And he rolled over to me and he said, it's okay that I'm going to die. And I said, it is. And he said, yeah, yeah, I need to go. I need to be with Camber. And I thought that that was strange because Camber was my 4-year-old grandson. He's the one that just had this AVM. And I thought, okay, well, if it makes John feel peace, great. He's going to go be Camber's guardian angel. So when this happened with Camber in December, I was like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? Did John need to go because he's going to receive him into the other side? Or what does this mean? And what I hope it means is that during this very scary time where my grandson was 12 days unconscious to this world, that he was at least with his grandfather in another world. That's what I hope it means. We don't know that. He's unable to have conversation with those kind of things. It was the one thing that gave me peace while he was on a ventilator and fighting for his life.
So I would ask the question, because there's people that do not believe in an afterlife and that. How would you coach them to get through this? Because they're not going to do it the way you did it. They don't believe in an afterlife or a Christ or anything like that, mm-hmm. but they can still get through this. What specifically do you feel they could engage in to get through things like this?
So a lot of times we talk about finding the blessings in it, right? Or finding the lessons learned or the whatever. And what I would talk to somebody in that term with is, are there things that have come out of this that you've learned that are valuable? If people can connect that even in tragedy, even in the hard thing, that there is some nugget of value and they get to create whatever that is, I have experienced that that is helpful for people that have no religious affiliation. They don't believe in an afterlife. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in spirit, universe, anything. And generally people that can connect with those things, I don't like to say, oh, there's blessings for everything inside this or it was meant to happen. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, is there some value? Do you see that there was some value created within this situation for you? Where would you find that value? And I would let them reflect on that and see where they go with that.
I would like to circle back on something. It was very small, but you touched on it, that while you were going through your grief with your husband, your daughter disconnected with you. And as a mother, that is really hard. So in that moment, I'm like imagining my kids are really young still, but my worst fear is that my children don't want anything to do with me when they get older. As probably most parents feel that, but that's my biggest fear because I love them and I want them to love me and I want them to have a positive relationship with me. So, and I feel like as moms, we identify with that. It's like, if we aren't mothers, what are we, right? Like, where is my worth if my daughter hates me? Where is my worth if my son no longer connects with me, right? Like, I must have sucked as a mother. I must have done something terrible, whatever it is. So I want some understanding of how did you get through that? What were some, I don't know if tools is the right word, or what was the mindset to help you find your worth?
Well, first of all, I had a trauma therapist and I hired an amazing life coach. So I had both on board and I'm really grateful for that because it was at a time in our country where getting into those kind of therapies or finding people was nearly impossible. And luckily I was already doing that I signed up for therapy before John died because I knew that I needed to give myself all the opportunity and tools I could have, right? So I was already doing those things. I would say how I got through it and how I managed, how I reflected to a point where I made peace with it was I realized my children didn't ask to be in my life. I brought them here. So I did the very best I could do with them and it was imperfect. I think the hardest thing for me is that I'm a very open mom and I'm willing to be accountable about my mistakes and I'm willing to have sit down conversations. And this child was unwilling to do that with me. In fact, most of my children actually are. And I've found that really hard because it's not the way I raised them. But I accept that they have different needs. And I learned a couple things. One, I learned I love my children. But there was no contract that they had to love me. I have to love me. And that is the biggest amount of growth that I've had in my life. Losing John, all of it. The biggest gift was in this disconnection with this child is I learned to love myself. I wasn't seeking it in somebody else. I'm not seeking it in another partner. I'm not seeking it in any of my children. I'm not seeking it for my grandchildren. I show up, I give what I can, and whether they accept it for being what it is or not, it's not my business. It's none of my business. I am giving to them freely because I love them and I truly do. And whether they accept that or they don't, that's not on me and it's not my business, and that's their journey to take. So that's where I came to be through that process. And it took counseling and therapy and the realization that it's not healthy for me to expect to get love from my children. That's an unfair request.
I think that is a really great perspective. I think there's something we've touched on in a couple of our previous recordings that has been service without attachment. And I think that that's what you're saying is you serve, you love, you give, but you don't expect them to say thank you. You don't expect them to give anything in return because you're doing it out of the love that you have. And it's a pure love of I don't expect anything, right?
Yeah. It also means that I now have boundaries that are better and healthier than I've ever had with my children before. And I'm still working on them even now, today. I still realize I have given way, way too much access to me, to them as adult children. This week, I needed a couple days to just step back from everybody. So I turned off my location. I share my location with one of my children. I did not respond to their phone messages. I responded by text only. I took a step back and I just said, I need this time for me because I'm feeling a little bit pushed and I need to be able to know that I'm doing things from a place of love and what I am able to do and not because I'm being asked of it. Or if I am being asked, if it feels like I can't do that, it's okay for me to say, I can't do that.
I think that's really important, is just accepting and being okay with giving what you can and saying no to what you can't. I think that's awesome. I had another thing I wanted to unpack with you because you've had some tragic losses and you've gone through various things that I would say is trauma, right? And you work with people who go through trauma. How do you help someone through what I think has been termed as like triggers? Through triggering moments, through triggering things, that how do you help someone heal from something that's been so damaging to them and help them take a step forward and learn from it and grow from it? Does that make sense? So, for example, like somebody who has been betrayed or who has gone through divorce or whatever it may be, who's really having a hard time moving on from that, if that makes sense, and who's really allowing that moment. And I'm coming from a place where I've never experienced it. So I don't want to, there's no judgment. I don't think there's any time limit on when you can overcome the grief. I don't know if that's the right term, but how do you help someone step away from that and know that that doesn't have to determine who they are and their future?
So it depends on the person, right? Again, we're all so unique and we're all so different. There are people that hang on to their grief and wear it as an emblem or a badge. But for other people, it just kind of depends. And you've touched on a couple things there. I would have to really talk to that person. Like, I can give you an example. I have a client. She lost her spouse, but she was actually having an extramarital affair when the spouse passed. And she didn't realize the love that she had for her spouse until, of course, he passed, and he passed suddenly. And then there was a lot of guilt. And then there was a realization that she didn't even want this relationship that she was in, and that that relationship wasn't really about what she thought it was about. So she had to unpack that relationship, learn to set boundaries, learn to say no, learn to leave and have the strength to leave and be on her own in order to make room to actually grieve the loss of her spouse. So she had pre-work to do to get to that.
So it's individual for each person. I will say, I think everybody has some form of trauma. And I think you said that. We all have our own forms of trauma. And there are times, at least for me, that I get triggered and I don't realize that I'm getting triggered. and I respond automatically, which is a pretty typical thing to do when you're in a reactive mind, right? I don't want to be that way. I want to be able to look at what I've experienced and grow from it and look at it and say, that happened, okay. Accept that it happened. What can I learn from it, and how can I either forgive or find gratitude for what was done, or however you want to say it.
Let me say grace, giving yourself grace. You will extend grace to those around you so easily, but oftentimes we don't extend ourselves some grace. So sometimes you're going to be triggered and you're going to be reactive. Once you're out of that situation and you go, oh, I was triggered, and that's not the way I wanted to act in that situation, you have the opportunity to reclaim that moment. And then once we realize what we've done and we've forgiven ourselves for that, then you can say to yourself, okay, how would I like to handle this if this happens in the future? And you need to kind of role play with it, because what's happening in the moment is you're reacting because that's all you know. You don't have any other scenario at the ready, but you already have your trauma response at the ready. So of course you're going to react. And let me tell you, Michael knows me well, and he will tell you, I was so reactive for so much of my life.
Oh yeah.
It takes, he's laughing because he knows it's true.
I've heard the mouth of a sailor come out of her.
He has stories.
Yes.
I was known for being able to cut people with a very sharp tongue. And it's not something I'm really proud of. And I feel like a lot of the work I'm doing now today, sometimes I get that reflected back to me. And I'm like, you know, I just get to own that. People might expect that from me. And I deserve it because I was there. And they don't know me right now. And they don't know the journey I've been on. And they don't know how I've grown. So I accept that it's not my business what other people think about me. I don't need their love. I don't need their attention, their focus. What I need is to be able to show up in a very authentic way with people. And when I do that, I do feel that the connection grows and I can heal relationships that I want to heal. So I would say to you, once you have that reaction, okay, you were reactive, take a time out. Find grace for yourself. Forgive yourself. Decide, what do I want to do differently? What would that look like? Go through some scenarios in your head. Play them out. And then go to the person and say, hey, look, I need to be accountable with you about that reaction. I don't like the way I reacted when this happened. And I wish I would have responded differently. And I'd like to work that out with you. Are you open to that? And take a moment to reclaim it. It takes courage and it takes bravery. But if we all had a little bit more courage to go face to face and be accountable with our part in the failure of the communication, we have an opportunity to reclaim it and to heal that.
You know, you touch on a couple points. As far as grace, I was in a conversation with somebody out in Las Vegas, and he wrote a book, and in it, it says people need to know their value. And I look at the world and say, all the problems are basically people saying, I want to know I matter. They're just expressing it in different ways. Giving ourselves grace would do a lot, not only to heal us, but to heal things around us and affect the world. But, you know, we can look at life as everything happens to me. So you look at your life, your husband died, your son had problems, your daughter ignored you, now you have a grandson, and you're like, life is piling on, and why is this happening to me? You can look at it that way, and then you're going to feel powerless and victim-y, and I'm just being punished for something. Or you can look at it as everything is in perfect order, divine order, and it's all happening for me. It's all happening for John. John's passing was divinely perfect for him, and you were in his life, so obviously there was a divine purpose for you being in his life at the time. Your daughter, your grandson, all that, and you can look at it, and instead of saying, why me, ask, why me? Why was I given these lessons? So I'm going to ask you, why you?
So that's funny that you say, why me, to reflect for me. People will ask me if John ever asked himself, why me? Why did I get this cancer? Why did I have to die? He died from prostate cancer at 54. Men don't die of prostate cancer at 54, typically. That's very rare. He would say, I'm dying of an old man disease that even old men don't die from. That's how he would describe it. And he never asked why me. I don't actually ever ask why me either, Michael, but...
Well, I'm asking it in the sense of, why were you entrusted with this situations? Why you? What is it about you that you get to learn and you have the power to deal with it?
Well, it's funny. I'm going to go back to what you said right before you asked me that question. You said, for me. And I think that everything that is happening for me. So for instance, I'm in the car driving to the hospital. I'm leaving one emergency department. My grandson's being life flighted. We're racing to Primary Children's. And I'm in the car and I'm angry. And I'm remembering John telling me I have to be there for Camber. So now I'm a little bit panicky. And I realize in that moment, I am in a victim state. I am freaking out. I am no help to anyone. And I give myself permission and I say, okay, Michelle, you get to be angry at God. You get to be angry at John. You get to be a victim. You get to cry it out. And when we hit the doors of the hospital, we get to suck it up and just figure out, how is this happening for this family? How is this happening for my grandchild? How is this happening for me? I don't get to really know the answers. My grandchild and my children get to figure out their answers for that. But for me, I kind of decided to take a stand that everybody's going to be reactive. Everybody's going to be having a trauma response. There are things that have happened that some of my kids are upset with me and offended by some of the things I've said or didn't do or whatever. And I just have to, I was accused of being a little bit heartless or protective with my social media account. I mean, crazy things, right? Trauma brings out craziness. And I could have just melted into, this is the most horrible thing. I can't show up. I'm not loved. I'm not these things. I can't do it. And I didn't. I did take those couple days. I stepped back and I took care of myself. I loved myself. I nurtured myself. I took time for myself. I wrote in a journal. I reflected on my feelings and what was coming up for me and what my concerns are, what my fears are. And I let that all brew for 2 days and get it out. And then I was able to leave it in the pages of my journal. And I was able to go back and be present and show up for my grandson and love him. And that's all I'm required to do. And that's all I'm going to do. So I don't ever ask why me. I really don't ever ask that. But I do say, this is happening for me. It's happening for me. And what is here for me? And that is literally how I manage every trauma.
Michelle, I have seen a remarkable transformation in you as we've known each other over the years. 30 years ago when we met in a training run, that's when I really got to know you. What you just said is amazing to me, because back then you were looking for validation and you were in a powerful position and you did a great job. But you were obviously looking for validation. And now you're very, I would say it's a transformation. You're very powerful. You're going to have your moments, of course. We all do. But you are a light. And I am grateful. I mean, we've talked about having guests. You're our first guest. And I am very grateful for what you brought and shared today.
Well, thank you, Michael, for saying that. And I will say, I appreciate the validation from you in a different way. It's nice that you see the transformation. I've done a lot of work and it's been painful. It's been a long, painful, hard road, but it's an interesting process to go through. And it's one thing to believe that you've made the transformation. It's another thing when people say, I've known you a long time and you're a different person.
Yeah. You're a transforming. It's ongoing.
I appreciate, Michelle, you sharing a lot of your vulnerable stories and your growth. I think it's been amazing. And I understand what you are saying with your transformation of it's validating knowing that, you feel different and you feel like you have been growing and you're changing. But when other people recognize it, it's like, well, maybe then it's actually true. I mean, what matters most is how you feel, right? But it's nice to see that.
What matters most is how I feel. But I will tell you, I do have adult children and they are still fairly young adult children. My oldest son with the grandchild who's sick is 32. The rest of them are still in their 20s. And I will say that I've been doing all of this growth and work and they don't see it. And so they know that sometimes I'm saying no, or I'm not answering the calls as much, or I'm not doing, they're like, something's gone on with mom, but because they're still seeing me from how they view me, right?
You know what, Michelle? This is funny because you remind me a lot of my mother in some aspect. And my mother has gone through transformations herself and she's been going on this journey, and I don't see her very often. I see her once every couple of months. And I have a very different perspective of my mother than how she is now. And so it's really hard for me sometimes to see the transformation because I'm not as exposed to her. But I'm like on the opposite side. So I see that you are growing and you're doing all these changes and you're accepting yourself, you're loving yourself, and you're becoming something greater, right? And my mom is in that transformation. She just got her life coach license and is actually, she does a lot of spiritual work where she's kind of being a medium for people. Anyways, and so she's making all of these changes. But for the longest time, I was just like, my mom is the same. She's the same that she's always been. She's not changing, right? But there have been moments when I'm like, no, I see that. I do see that. And I love getting to know you because now I'm like, well, maybe I need to look even more. Maybe I need to get to know her even more so that I can see her transformation, because what matters most is what she is, how she's feeling and what she's doing, right? But I think as a mother, it's always appreciative when your kids can see that you're doing your best and you are trying and you're growing and you're, I don't know, developing yourself. It's always nice to be like, wow, mom, I can see how much you've grown, or whatever it is. Because I can see that it can be painful when, as a mom now, it's like trying to project into the future how it would feel if my kids didn't notice that I was trying to get better and that I was trying to be the best that I could be, and my kids just don't want anything to do with me regardless of the fact that I'm trying to change, right? I don't know. It's really, I love getting to know you and learning this about you because I see that in my mom and how she's trying so hard to be different and how all of her kids are very resistant to that change.
Right. Yeah. Well, because you have a projection or an idea of who she is. This is, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing I've also started to have a realization of. In fact, this hit me a couple weeks ago. I parented my kids all wrong and I figured it out. And I'm like, why hasn't anybody said this? And if they did, I've missed it. I've missed it in all the literature. So this is what we do. I was raised by my mom and dad, and they did the very best that they could for me. And it was completely not what I needed or wanted. And so I grew up and I had a family, and I'm like, I'm going to fix this. So I parented my children fixing all of the broken needs that I had in my relationship with my parents, which my kids had no reference for. They weren't there. They don't know what I missed. And so I'm pouring out all of this love, time, attention, taking my kids to activities and doing things that I didn't get as a child that I felt were important. I made a bunch of other mistakes because I didn't see my child. I was parenting me, not my individual children. And I'm like, man, I want to go back and do this all over again.
Ugh! Wow.
This is the key.
That's huge.
This is the key. See your child for who they are. What is their love language? How do they connect with you? What are their needs? What is unique about them? What are they asking you for when they're throwing those tantrums? How is it different than the other child that is completely different and not the same child? One is not the same as the other, right? They're unique. They're individuals.
I think that is so huge, Michelle. That is so huge. We tend to parent what we lacked, right? And I feel it in myself. I love this, Michelle. This tidbit was like a huge golden nugget for me because I've been doing the same thing with my kids.
Of course you have.
And I need to see them. Yeah. Right. And this is great. I mean, if this is not helpful for anybody else, I find it very helpful for me.
Well, I'm so glad. If I can impart any of my faux pas in life and help other people see things and improve, awesome. Like, be awesome. Be your best self. And I've made plenty, and I continue to make plenty of mistakes. But it's all about really reflecting. It's taking that time to reflecting. For me, my coaching program, I went through the Jay Shetty program. And for me, the hours of journaling and reflecting on every process or every activity and taking myself through those activities as well, they didn't necessarily encourage that. But I mean, I worked myself through them. Those reflection, that is where we make the changes. I've dated a lot of men that have read a lot of amazing books. I've recommended books to people. And people will read the book and they can speak the knowledge. And this is what you taught us in the training. And I keep telling this to people. In fact, recently, I think I've said this 5 times in the last week alone. Knowledge is the booby prize. It's not enough to have the knowledge. We have to spend the time reflecting and doing the work. And that's the piece that I think most people are missing. We're sharing memes. There's catchphrases. There's a lot of kind of psychobabble we're throwing out there to the universe. And we're feeling all arrived and whatever. And the reality is, this work is hard. It can be gruesome. It can be mentally challenging. Because we got to sit down and we have to be honest with ourselves. And that is sometimes the hardest thing to get to. And then we have to really reflect and make different choices. And that is a process that we have to take ourselves. And that is the key to growth. That's it. That's what a life coach can do for you. When I'm working with people, all I'm doing is asking questions and being curious. I'm providing the sounding board to reflecting to them what they are speaking. So if I was coaching someone and said, like, well, why did you choose right and wrong? Let's talk about that, right? So I don't do a lot of teaching in my coaching. I do mostly questioning. And that is the value of coaching, because we're not trained to be reflective and to ask ourselves these questions.
You don't want to.
Right.
We will, up to a point where it's in our comfort zone, but it's pushing ourselves out of it. That's why a coach is valuable, because they will sort of nudge you to look beyond, to be one with what is, even mm-hmm. if you don't like what is. So, yeah.
I am not a destination person. I've really never set a big destination. So, like, as far as like life coaching, like, I probably shouldn't admit this, I don't have a destination. I really don't. I'm a little bit of go with the flow and kind of feel where things are meant for me. And then something amazing happens in my life. Started out as a massage therapist, became a doula, was a childbirth teacher in 3 different modalities of childbirth education, became a home birth midwife. Then I had a career flip through lobbying for advocating for women's ability to have a home birth in Utah. I got picked up to work on a campaign, started making money on the campaign. My life has just been an amazing adventure. And I suspect it'll continue to be an amazing adventure. I am so blessed. I am so abundantly blessed that even all of the hard things and tragedies that I've experienced in life, they do not compare to the joy that I experience in life. Like, it's just not comparable. So, like, I've been through a lot of crazy experiences in my life, but hard things can happen, and we can be in really crazy situations. Some of them we put ourselves in. To me, life is an amazing adventure, traumas and all of it. And I think sometimes I don't want to minimize people's trauma. I don't want to minimize my own. But I think sometimes we focus too much on it instead of just finding what can we learn from in here and how do we move forward, not move on. I'm not saying deny it. I'm not saying not to process those things. But there comes a time that you just have to pick the golden nuggets, pick them up, and move forward.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on our podcast. We're so grateful for you. You've really shared so much of your insight and your experiences. We're grateful that you were able to be vulnerable with us. And I've learned a ton just from this one interaction with you. And I'm glad that Michael was able to have you come on with us. You're located in Utah, right? Where in Utah?
I am in Layton, Utah. I take clients. Actually, none of my clients are in Utah.
Wow.
All of my clients are all over the states. So I've been referred from multiple people, but none of them are in Utah. So yeah, you can find me at michellescharf.com.
Awesome. Yeah. And we want to do shout out to your podcast. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. We hope that you can come back and share some more of your joy stories rather than the trauma stories. I mean, like you said, I think we focus too much on the bad and we don't focus on the wonderful, beautiful things that our life becomes. We'd like to give a big thank you once again to Michelle Scharf for joining us on our podcast. If you liked today's episode, please go ahead and hit the subscribe button and share with your friends and family, maybe someone who needs to hear what was said on this podcast. And don't forget to follow us on social media. We are on Instagram and Facebook as You Already Are Podcast. We answer questions and we take suggestions on our episodes, so we're always looking for new content. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and we'll see you next time on You Already Are. Thank you for joining us on another episode of You Already Are. Remember, you already are everything you aspire to be. Continue this journey and embrace the beauty it brings. Create the life you desire and remember your infinite worth and infinite potential. Until next time, live as though you already are.